Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. I'm at Innovation Forum's Positive Impact Conference in London, and I'm with Kenny Omesiabu, who's Head of Environment with Tesco. Welcome to the podcast, Kenny.
Thank you, Ian.
We've just been talking about the impact and the benefits of using science-based targets to catalyse action and unlock budgets and businesses. So why don't you tell us a bit about why and how Tesco is using the SBTs to frame your approach to emissions impacts?
Thank you, Ian. We set our climate change targets, the last one before the science-based targets, as early as 2006, 2008. And at the time, we gave our best estimate of what a stretching but realistic target would be for our own operations, which is a 50% reduction per square foot of store and distribution center. And we also set a target for our suppliers. That was to be achieved by 2020. And we kept track of all of those. We put in place systems to track energy use, refrigerant leakages and all of that, transport emissions and so on across our entire operations. And we could track how we're doing, and we're doing quite well. So when we last took stock of it in 2016-17, we saw that we were about 42% of the 50% goal. So it was obvious we're going to get to 50% because the exec at the time had made funds available, made budgets available every year to address energy efficiency improvements, refrigerant efficiency improvements, and so on. And that we were drawing down all through the years. After the Paris Climate Agreement, or actually around the Paris Climate Agreement, we're one of the companies invited by We Mean Business Coalition to sign up to committing ourselves to set science-based targets. We were already thinking 2020 isn't that far away. We're already on track. And we thought the next set of targets we set had to be evidence-based. It has to follow the science and so on. And so we did. We set science-based targets for our own operations, for our manufacturing, supply chain, and for agricultural supply chain.
It's interesting, you made the point in the session just now that before science-based targets came along, it was almost as if targets were just being pulled from the air. Was that a problem you found at Tesco? You thought, well, our best guess is we can manage this?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much a problem because it turned out that we had a pretty stretching target, actually. But yeah, it wasn't based on anything except our sense of what needed to happen. And I think it's a very positive development, A, that the IPCC, and also ratified by the Paris Agreement, then laid out the pathway that we needed to get to, not above 2 degrees, and an aspiration to keep it not above 1.5 degrees. That gave us a clear direction. And then we made our commitment as a business, actually, to go for the 1.5 degree trajectory for our own operations. Our supply chain, we kept at 2 degrees simply because agriculture and manufacturing are different beasts to the emissions from our own operations.
Using science-based targets to achieve our ambitions is one thing, but there are a lot of challenges associated with that, specifically one around measurement. How do you make sure you keep measuring the things you need to keep measuring to demonstrate you're getting towards, you're achieving the targets?
So we started our journey. This was when we first set out in the noughties. We did a hotspots analysis of where our biggest emission sources were at Tesco. And at the time, emissions from electricity was about 65 to 70% of our global emissions, followed by refrigeration and so on and so forth. So we knew where the biggest sources of emission lay for our business. And so we could then start prioritizing our strategy to first go for that big chunk, hence why renewable electricity was the big one we went after. We addressed that. And as I said, we already put in place measures to track energy use in all our stores. We then have the government data that enables us to know, well, how much does that energy consumption convert into in terms of emissions. We know about refrigerant. Whenever we have any top up of refrigerant gases in our stores, we know that we're topping up because that volume has leaked. And then we can also calculate the greenhouse impact or global warming potential of those greenhouse gases. And we can measure all of that across all our stores, across all the international and UK markets where we operate. And we have a database to bring that together, and we can track how we're doing every year.
You mentioned earlier that the technology exists to achieve 1.5 Celsius.
For our operations.
For your operations.
Correct.
What do you think in terms more broadly, what are the challenges around persuading boards and managers and people involved in the business to really grasp the opportunities here? Because there's a huge upside for all businesses if they can really achieve these targets. But what are the conversations that really help bring everyone on board?
The key thing to start with is that most companies, most businesses have boards who, like the rest of society, want to make an impact on this issue. So their values are already in the direction that they want to make an impact. But of course, the boards, the exec, the CEOs also have lots of other things that are equally important that they ought to be working on. And so part of it means that they don't know the details of what needs to happen. So it needs leadership actually from also the experts within the business to say to the company, yes, this is a good thing to go for. It's good because of these and these reasons. That usually doesn't take much persuasion. Where the challenge can be is to then say, this is how we'll do it. Because sometimes I find that sustainability experts don't then go into the details of laying down a roadmap for the business to say, here's what we need to do this year. Here's what we need to do in 5 years or in 10 years to get to that goal. Mm-hmm. They stop short of simply saying, this is something worth doing. You go figure out how to do it. Now, that's not serving the company as best we can.
It's definitely, as you say, getting to the end is the most important thing, and then seeing the route to the end and kind of measuring along the way and setting our roadmap. We were asked a question in the session, provocative question, are you going to get there? How can you demonstrate you are going to get there? And I guess you're doing that because you have to internally demonstrate to your colleagues we are achieving what we set out to achieve. And then you've also externally got a good story to tell because you say, look, we are going to achieve this. If the NGOs come knocking at the door, you can demonstrate we're on the road to achieving that. That why you set out these milestones?
Absolutely. So before we set them out, we didn't want our targets and the milestones we set out to simply be prayers of where we hope we'll get to. We wanted to get a sense that we could get to them. So we actually did the work of what it would take in advance. And to your question earlier about budgets, what that enables the business to do is actually to plan within a 3, 5, 10 year timeline what it would take every year to stay on track. And then it gets worked into the budget cycles in the business. The business integrates it into its business planning processes. Then it gets embedded that way. Then it's not a matter of scrambling for budget on a year-to-year basis. But that comes simply because we had the clarity about what it would take to meet these goals. Then the next thing is simply to track, because of course the best laid plans, right? We have the clear process to track. We can track every quarter, we can track every year. And if there's anything that's come up we didn't anticipate that we think might jeopardize reaching our goals, we escalate it to the board and say, we need to take a view on this. Do we revise our strategy? Do we revise our ambition, or do we secure the budget to drive things forward?
For businesses, one of the key environmental challenges right now has been around the plastic packaging and plastic pollution. It's something everyone's talking about. I know that's not your direct responsibility, but is it an example of how you have to be ahead of the media curve? If you're ahead of the media curve on other issues, other environmental issues, then, for example, if suddenly there's a great public outcry around other environmental issues, you can, using the SBTs, say, look, actually, we're dealing with this, we're on top of it. Is that the kind of the benefit of using them?
Absolutely. The key thing is, I think, is nobody knows any business more than the people running the business. So I think it's quite irresponsible if a business waits for the media to tell them what they ought to focus on. If the time to start planning a sustainability response to an issue is when there's a media expose, it doesn't quite give you enough time to make sure you're going to the right solutions, because then there's an outcry, there's pressure on you, and some businesses might get tempted to go for gimmicks rather than solutions. We've been working on packaging for a long time. We set out our packaging targets in our Little Health plan way before the big public explosion of this subject. Of course, when there is a stronger public outcry as well, it helps focus on agenda and amplifies it some more. But if you didn't have a strategy coming into that, you find yourself scrambling. And for a business like ours, which is quite recognizable, with whom customers have an ongoing relationship, going into the stores a few times a week and so on, we can't afford to be caught on the back foot and not have thought through something that is quite important to our customers.
Sure. Moving forward, it strikes me also that a more level regulatory playing field and an ambitious regulatory playing field is very important. How much do you recognise the implementation in the UK, or the potential implementation of the Committee on Climate Change's recommendations around the future of climate impact? Is that something that's very helpful for a business like Tesco, which already set out what you're planning to do?
Absolutely. As you said earlier, we already set our targets based on a 1.5 degree trajectory, we still have a commitment to become a zero carbon business by 2050. In fact, when the government supported the parliament's bill to get to net zero in the UK by 2050, the Secretary of State for the Environment, Michael Gove, quoted Tesco to say Tesco and other companies have been on the forefront of this. They've started the journey to becoming zero carbon businesses, and that gives a kind of faith and confidence to them that this can be done. Yeah, for us, we didn't then have to realign our strategies because our strategy was already very ambitious.
And I guess it means that it's a level playing field, so it means it's not unfair on the likes of Tesco who are stretching away on climate and environmental issues.
Correct. That was your question. You're right. Yes, absolutely right. So now that we've moved that far, what we want to see is actually the industry to match that, whether it's our commitment to publishing and what we've been doing for a number of years now, our food waste data, whether it's our science-based targets on a 1.5 degree or our call for a nationally consistent recycling infrastructure in the UK. We want to play that role in leading the industry in addressing some of these big issues that takes more than one player to sort out.
Sure.
And yes, a regulatory framework creates that level playing field and helps us all move together. But it has to be obviously smart and effective regulation. And we try and contribute our understanding and expertise in shaping those as well, where needed.
There's clearly a long way to go, but it's great to see businesses like Tesco taking the lead and really moving forward on these essential areas to deal with the massive climate emergency we have right now. For now, and thank you very much, Kenny Omeyesiebu from Tesco. Really much appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah.